to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we do that every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this radio station. Then the podcasts are made available at both richarddugan.com, the homepage, and the radio show's page. And we also link to our guests. We also have the podcasts on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, and Stitcher. And if the list gets any longer, I'm just going to have to say, just Google it. Because the list is getting kind of long in terms of expanding our reach and our audience so more people can hear our guests talk about how they are doing the work they're doing to help change the world for a better for all of us. We're trying to do just that. So we hope that you will avail yourselves of the link that we also make available to our guests' website. And then you can continue your evolutionary process, your education, if you will, your edification. Entertainment, too. We like to try to have fun on these programs as well. Today, we're going to have some fun. But first, I want to remind you, too, that sometimes these programs go longer than the 50 minutes that are allocated for the radio broadcast. And, of course, subject to our guest availability. Sometimes we might go on another 10 or 15 or 20. Or I've actually had to go on another 30 minutes with some guests. And you know what that means, don't you? It means that you have to go to the podcast locations to listen to the entire interview. And it's all in its entirety, so please avail yourselves of the podcasts. And if you'd like to support this program because you like what we're doing and it resonates with you and you want to be a part of this, please join us if you can. We have a PayPal link on our website that allows you to do just that and support this broadcast. We are not nonprofit, so I want to make that clear. Don't want to get in trouble with the IRS. So your contribution, your support, as I like to say, is not tax deductible, but it is greatly appreciated. It helps keep things rolling along here. We are going to talk today with a very special guest who has written a very interesting book about healing, and we're going to talk with Joan Diver. She is the author of When Spirit Calls, A Healing Odyssey. Joan, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege.
I think that we're going to really have a good time here and enjoy this. Now, this is an interesting journey for, if I'm not mistaken, the character in the book in particular, a Howard Truman?
Howard Thurman?
Thurman, I beg your pardon. There's an H there. There it is. Thurman, Howard Thurman. And he's actually listed here in regards to this whole aspect. Let me ask you, is the title similar to what we would expect, say, listening to that still small voice? We're hearing that call to action, if you will, or a call to a purpose in life?
Yes, I think it's both that, a call to a purpose in life, perhaps sometimes a one that changes along the journey. It's also, I think about spirit calls us in all situations. So in my life, so many things have happened that I never planned, that I never would have expected. Some I never might have wanted, but in the end, they turned out to be gifts. And so I think it's about that still small voice that's really there all the time and that really can take us to a new and much more conscious place.
And the way you've described it, I think I've had similar kinds of experiences where the initial event, shall we say, takes place, and you're looking at it, you know, at that moment and going, oh my gosh, this is a disaster, a calamity, a catastrophe, whatever the case might be. But when you're able to step back, you calm the emotions down, you start to realize, oh, there are some interesting opportunities here. And it's not the calamity, catastrophe, and chaos and so forth that when you were wrapped up in your emotions, it appeared to be.
That's correct. And in my case, the catalyst if you will, was having a situation with my back that didn't seem to heal even after surgery. So I was looking for alternatives and new ways of dealing with it. And I couldn't have known what I was truly looking for when I thought I was just looking for a cure for my back, because it opened up eventually a whole new world to me, and one that I've devoted my life to since.
So let's talk about post-catalyst, as far as what doors or gifts, doorways that were open to you or for you, and the connection to spirit, if you will, that is still with you today. I'm very interested, because many of our, it seems as though more and more people are having, you know, with one experience in particular, near-death experiences. It's like, it's almost becoming commonplace. It's like, I have a left hand, I have a near-death experience to tell you about. So tell us about your experiences and your, I want to kind of put it this way, your either reconnection or deeper connection to that voice, if you will.
Yes, I would call it a deeper connection. It was there, but much deeper. So it opened me up to really pay attention to that. And not just to the voice, but where that voice was leading me to understand. My situation was that I blew out a disc playing squash with my husband. It was my first and last squash game, because a week later I couldn't move, and 7 weeks later I ended up having surgery. And while I could move after the surgery and I could walk and so forth, I still had a lot of residual pain. And so I kept looking for things to heal that. And I started to discover, you know, things like acupressure and acupuncture, and then meditation and affirmations kind of led me along the way. And I got a lot better. And 7 years after this first incident, I was sound asleep, and I woke up to my own screams. I was coughing. And I had, it turned out, done much more damage this time and blown out another disc. And my husband wanted me to call an ambulance, and I chose not to. So I stayed at home with my acupuncturist coming. And the reason I chose not to is I just didn't feel called to do anything about it immediately. So one day I stood up by the side of my bed and I looked down, and my leg was turning purple. And my bladder was obviously leaking. And I realized I was in, you know, real trouble. Mm-hmm. And my husband once again said, we need to, you know, call somebody, take you to the hospital. And I said, no, I don't know yet what to do. So I waited that day and I waited that night. And the next morning I knew exactly what to do. And I called a hospital president whom I happened to know, and it was a Saturday morning at 8:30. You wouldn't expect me to find him sitting at his desk waiting for a call. But he said he would take care of me and ordered an ambulance and found me a surgeon. And that surgery had the quality of a miracle. And I started having these experiences of brilliant light in the night, which would disappear when I would open my eyes. And my husband found me on the bed looking like someone he didn't know. And I called a psychic and I said, you know, what's going on here? I'm running a foundation, you know, what's all this other stuff going on? I was head of a large foundation in Boston at the time. And she said, you're in the process of balancing your spiritual, emotional, physical, and mental energy. And honestly, at the time, I didn't know what she was talking about, but I'm sure many of your listeners will. And so I was so much better after that surgery. My acupuncturist came to the hospital, got rid of all the post-surgical pain. I called a friend in New Mexico and asked if we could visit. And she said I should see a healer while I was there. And was able to see that healer, not on that trip, but later. But I asked my friend, what does this person do? And she said, well, she balances your spiritual, emotional, physical, and mental energies. And I thought, okay. So I just felt led to this. And so I went to this healer in New Mexico, and I had a past life experience, and I connected to the divine within myself, and then everything changed. And I can keep going. But you asked me what the catalyst was and how it opened me up, and that was the experience. But it continues. It's a long story with a lot of openings.
Well, we've got plenty of time at the front end here of the program, so we're not rushed for time in that regard. It is interesting, though, that I don't know if there have ever been any studies done in this regard, but it just seems as though more and more people are starting to have these kinds of experiences. And it does usually seem to be around some kind of trauma, if you will. Sometimes it's a major a physical challenge, same maybe an emotional challenge, maybe someone passing and so forth.
Yeah.
I know that when my dog, we had to put her down back in October of 2018, when she did pass, and it was very quiet and very peaceful and all, when we drove up to the house in preparation for that afternoon's, and I want to call it a ceremony, because that's what it was, there was a hawk flying around.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these signs that they sort of pop up all over the place.
They do.
And I'm wondering if you've had those kinds of experiences as well since then, in terms of sort of maybe not in terms of saying, okay, well, I just saw that creature and that means blah, 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 but more along the lines of, here's this hawk, and I just took it to mean, you know, this is the right day, this is the right time, you know, it's kind of like that's the mile marker, okay, if you will, and we're on the right path and we're going in the right direction and so forth. Not trying to read too much into it, because that's what we tend to do, but thinking
exactly
in terms of the synchronicity in this world, in this world from the other, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my whole life has been one continuous synchronicity. And sometimes, as I did this summer, you know, a hawk flew right in front of me while I was getting ready to publish my book. And, you know, a hawk is a messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine, my book is a very personal story. And so putting it out in the public realm as my first book was a challenge, shall we say, and for me on an emotional level that I really did not expect. I've been working on this for 24 years, and, you know, thank goodness it's finally coming out, right?
Now I don't feel so bad. I've been working on mine for 18.
So. Well, there you go. So you only got six more to go. So, so I saw this hawk, and it literally flew right in front of me across the road. I mean, it swooped, and I thought, okay. I did know in my heart I was on the right path. I had no doubt. I've had so many signs, there's just no question. But absolutely, they happen all the time. And it isn't really just things like that, but it's the invitations that we get. My life has been full of invitations, unexpected, where somebody asked me to do something or asked me to go somewhere. And then I think it's for one reason, and it turns out to be for a total different reason. And I think that's something that we have to pay attention to also. How are we being called through other people and how they're inviting us? In my experience, I was invited on a trip to Israel by the Jewish Community Relations Council. And it was a group of women who were leaders in Boston who were being introduced to the social political issues of Israel. And also we were given a tour so that we were really in many ways walking the path of Jesus. And so I had an experience where I was totally led to leave the group in the middle of the night in the dark during Intifada and make my way to the Old City of Jerusalem where I had never been before. And I landed at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And I had a very profound experience there at what is thought to be the tomb of Christ. And so that was one. And another was being invited on a trip to Egypt. And I knew I had to go. This one was a meditation journey, so I knew it would be a spiritual journey. And we went and meditated at these temples along the Nile. And it was all very moving. We went to Mount Sinai. And there are a number of experiences that I had. But on the final day, we went to the Great Pyramid of Giza. And we climbed up to the king's chamber. And each of us had a turn in a sarcophagus. And we were doing this in a way like ancient priests and priestesses had done, who received some kind of guidance while they were there. Well, they stayed there 3 days and three nights. We had 3 minutes. But what happened for me there was that I found something arising from within me. And it was a commitment. And I didn't know what it was to, but it was with full faith and trust, I will go forth in thy service. And I could never have known when I said yes to that trip that that's what would happen. Mm. And as a result, I resigned from my job 3 weeks later.
Hmm. I've kind of been in that kind of a situation myself as far as quitting jobs.
Uh-huh.
Just because, the way that my wife and I wound up in Santa Barbara, for example, the station uh-huh. was sold, and the owners were not going to retain the existing staff. They were going to replace them and go a different direction format-wise. And I could have, at that time, I had 3 months, 4 months to make a decision and find another job. I just decided to stay put until the end. And when the end was over, I'm cleaning my desk out. My wife calls me March 1st at 2:30 in the afternoon, says, I just quit my job.
Ah, how about that? That happens. Well, when I announced that I was leaving my job, my husband was called by the University of Pennsylvania to see if he would be interviewed for the dean of Penn's law school.
Hmm.
It's the very same day, and it was the first time in 18 years that I was free to go wherever he might want to go, because I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. But 3 days later, I did know what I was going to do, and that was do a healing training. And it was amazing that making that decision to let go of the job that I absolutely loved. I still loved it after 18 years. I was at the peak of my career. But what was so amazing was, first, Colin tells me that he'd gotten that call that day. And then the next day, I get a call from a church outside of Boston. And one of the ministers there, priests, asked me if I'll come do a healing service for people there. What I haven't said in this interview is that people seem to have been falling ill or getting hurt in my presence for several years off and on. And she had heard about this. And so anyway, she asked me if I would do this. I'd never been to her church. I had never done healing in a church. And then the next night, I was told that a healing training that I had heard might happen in the fall was going to go forward. And I was invited. Will you come? So it's amazing when we let go, what can open up for us and how we're led in that moment.
And absolutely. And, you know, that's the amazing thing is the way, again, synchronicity seems to step in, because all of that transpired on March 1st. We decided to take a week's vacation here to kind of do some reconnaissance, but also relax and so forth. Went back to Phoenix, put the house up for sale. It sold in 2 months. And we were actually in Santa Barbara 2 weeks before the real estate market crashed in Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then we began our lives here, and it's like, wow, you know, and I've always said that I've always felt that I've always been in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
May not have always seemed like it, but I've always been a very optimistic person in that regard. And I'm hoping that through stories such as yours, other people begin to see the same thing, that, mm-hmm. you know, it's not impossible. Whatever it is that you're wanting to accomplish, it's not impossible in spite of all of the obstacles, you know. And, you know, I've been one of my wife's and my dreams is to own a large enough truck to be able to haul a travel trailer, to be able to go camping and do all of these different things. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, it's never going to happen. And all of a sudden, I'm in a car accident. I'm not hurt. The other driver's not hurt. But mm-hmm. my car is declared a total loss.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going to pay the loan off. We're going to get a little extra, you know, after that. And I'm qualified for this amount of money through our financial institution, blah, blah, blah. Short, long story short, we may have the opportunity to move forward on that. Well, mm-hmm. but you don't think that a car accident is going to be the catalyst? Really?
Right.
And actually, you want to know what the real catalyst was? The reason why I made my left turn down the road where I ended up having the accident was because I didn't want to wait in line because the two lanes were being merged into one and the line was extremely long. And I suppose you could say I was a little impatient. And so the universe said, okay, fine, then we'll do it this way.
Right. You had an obstacle in the way.
Yeah.
You overcame it, literally and figuratively.
Indeed. And so it's very interesting in how we need to really start taking a look at that. And as far as you and your husband and your family and so forth, what has been their response to all this? Receptive, or has there been a little resistance to some of the things that you claim and you say? And again, I will let you know that I never challenge anybody who tells me whatever their experiences is that, oh, no, I'm sorry, Joan, that can't be. That doesn't happen. Hey, I'm not going to take that away from anybody. If you had that experience, who am I to say you didn't? Okay, I'd like to hear more. So what about any kinds of resistance from family, friends, acquaintances, and so forth?
Sure. Well, at first, my husband, he was a law professor when this all started, and then ultimately became dean of a law school. So he's a very rational person, and he didn't quite know what I was doing, but he, over time, he became intrigued because he could see the changes in me, and there was part of him that felt he was being left behind. He felt that his life was becoming humdrum compared to my spiritual adventures, where I was discovering all these new things and having these real experiences of consciousness and that which connects us all and that which we hold inside us. And I was becoming a somewhat different person, and I give him credit for just hanging in there with me along this journey. He calls himself a stowaway on my journey. And it really is a great description, because he had to deal with his own emotions about, you know, how he was feeling that, and his fears that I might leave him, which was never crossed my mind, mm-hmm. ever.
Yeah.
But I understand the fear. And he had to deal with all that, and he did, and I give him great credit. And so now it's really wonderful, because he's kind of my executive assistant on my book tour and helping me, you know, with a lot of arrangements. So this has become a very beautiful thing for us to share. And he, over time, had his own experiences. He went to ashram with me. We've shared various churches that we've gone to. He has done some past life work. He discovered someone that he met that he realized was somebody who appeared in a healing session. And so I think that kind of opened his eyes. Now I have one son who who says he's an atheist. He's a very caring person, and he does a lot of good in the world. And so he looks at me slightly askance. But he brought his entire family to my book talk in Philadelphia last week. And my other son shares more of this journey. He's actually went to India with me at one point. So, yes, friends, some thought I was crazy. But you know what happened when I left my job? Because I knew a lot of people in Boston. And I announced that I was leaving in order to do spiritual healing. And I was very open about it. And I explained what was meant by that at the time in my life. And people called me up and asked me to lunch. This was back in late 1980s. And it wasn't as prevalent as today. And I had bank presidents calling me and saying, could I have lunch with you? And then people would share their experiences with me. And so I think the more we all share our experiences, the more other people can feel comfortable sharing theirs. And so there were people that I know thought I was crazy. I know there are people who are friends. They read the book that they say it's a stretch. On the other hand, they'll also say, but I was so touched by this. It changed my life in this way. So I think we all need to be open about this. And you live in a part of the country that's perhaps a little more open. I live, you know, in Boston, and but I've been very gratified by the reception I've received.
Well, I have to say that my experiences, especially when I was working back in the 80s, early 90s for a Christian radio station, one of the things that was so gratifying to me was when I would meet certain individuals. And I met one gentleman, very committed, a Bible-believing Christian, you know, evangelical, fundamentalist, and so forth, who was actually writing, he had written a book that I was interviewing him about that was challenging the very organization or institution, and again, we're talking now institutions here, as far as the premise that they've been promoting for the last 1,500 years or so. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about not just, it wasn't just about the Catholic Church, but we're talking about Christendom in general in this country. Yet he still has a great love and so forth for it. But he says, wait a minute, you know, what I'm reading here just doesn't make any sense. And as I began to do, I actually started doing his research using the information that he had written in his book. I used my own source material, and I found the same conclusion. I came to the same conclusions that he did that made logical sense in my head. Now, by the same token, I'm sitting here going, we're talking here about doctrine. We're talking about dogma. We're not talking about spirit or metaphysical esoteric concepts here. We're not talking necessarily about listening to the still small voice. We're talking about the rules and regulations. And it was just very fascinating as I met more and more people. What I found was that these individuals, they were believers who were thinking for themselves, you know, and they were not allowing some outside source, human outside source, to tell them that their experience, whatever it was. I mean, on this program, tell me your story. We interviewed a Christian who actually practices out of body experience. All right. He actually induces it on a regular basis. I says, where in the Bible does it say you can do that as a believer? He said, nowhere. But I, you know, and so that was a very fascinating conversation. So people, I don't know if you're familiar, for example, with Edgar Cayce.
Yes.
Here's a guy who had a set of beliefs, but still did the channeling that he did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was because of and regardless of, or maybe be, you know, it's just, and that gave me hope that, oh, maybe there is hope for the future, that we won't get bogged down and that there will be some of us who will, such as yourself, who will open people's eyes a little bit.
I think we have to remember, too, I'll talk about my experience. My experience is that when I went to an ashram and also when I started having these healing experiences, it helped me to understand what Christianity really was all about. And I'm an Episcopalian, so we're a little freer in terms of what we're so-called allowed to believe. We don't have any rules about that. We're all seekers,
right?
But all these experiences started making sense, more sense to me. It's the way the words were being used. And so by going outside of my tradition and spending time in an ashram where they actually, you know, use Sanskrit words to describe things, but really didn't talk in the doctrinal kind of way.
Yeah.
It really helped me to understand what some words meant. Like sin means separation from God,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these traditions. And so what are we doing when we're doing spiritual healing? We're trying to heal that separation. So you begin to understand that really it's all one, but we just have all these different interpretations. And I don't know exactly how we're all going to come to that same place, except that I do think if more and more of us have this inner experience of what joins us all together, it's going to be much easier. But yes, many of us, I mean, I've only been in the Episcopal Church for a number of years, not my whole life, but I started with Howard Thurman, and Howard Thurman believed that we all belong to each other. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the basic tenet. We all belong to each other. It's not about separating us from anybody. And so people from all traditions came into his church, which was at Boston University. It was so-called Methodist. He was Baptist by background. But he had experiences of oneness himself as a mystic. And that's what he brought forward. And so the more of us who can have those experiences, we can help to create a much better world for ourselves.
Joan Diver's my guest here on the program. We're talking about, of course, a lot of different things, but also her book, When Spirit Calls. And we hopefully will encourage you to pick up a copy of this Healing Odyssey. You can do that, of course, through, I'm sure, Amazon and other outlets, or joandiver.com. And we will be linked to that website as well. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we'll be right back.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Joan Diver here on the program as we continue our conversation with her. And this is one of the fascinating things about this program, Joan, is that, yeah, we could sit here and just go page by page, chapter by chapter, but I want people to pick up a copy of the book rather than going through that. But I encourage people to get a copy of When Spirit Calls. Go to joandiver.com. We encourage you to do that. It is a healing odyssey, and we hope that it provides that kind of thing for you. You know, it's interesting, too. I personally, and I've shared this before, that I've never sought out any one person or ideology or philosophy, you know, in that respect. And I always thought there was there was something wrong with me because everybody else seemed like that they had sort of latched on to this teaching and this person who's teaching it, whether it's regardless of where it comes from, whether it's from the East or the West. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And what it's allowed me to do, of course, is experience a lot of different philosophies. And that's the kind of the word that I like to use.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even I was back in the 90s for a year and a half. I was a member of the Baha'i faith.
Oh, that's terrific. I've been to
you know,
that.
I mean, born and raised Roman Catholic. Even while mm-hmm. I was still living at home, I managed to sneak off with my neighbors to the Mormon temple for one service on a Sunday. Of course, when I got home, my mother said, "Doesn't count. Go to Mass." And off I went. I've been to spiritualist churches, Unity, Unitarian. Been associated with Eastern philosophy and Hinduism and Self-Realization Fellowship, Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship. And I mean, just the list goes on, and other like programs, teachings from Desjardins, for example, a whole program that was set up that continues on to this day. And it just fascinates me what's discussed that then elicits a question. And I heard a question just the other day that was really profound. I said, I have to remember that question. I have to remember that question, and I have. So I want to ask you this question because I think it's really kind of a neat question. And it has to do with our understanding of our place in the universe, of the life after this one, of metaphysics and the whole esoteric spiritual construct. Regardless of what it is that you're searching for, in as far as a question, is it better to know or not to know?
And is it better to know the question?
Is it better to know the answers to the questions that may cause you consternation? It's like when I started asking these different types of doctrinal questions back in the days of the Christian radio station, I was told, why don't you just go read the writings of the founding fathers of the faith? Because they've answered all of these questions. And I thought, well, wait a minute, who said that they were the arbiters of the faith? And I must be in good company because I don't even know who these guys are, and I'm asking these questions. But it's that as well as, is there life after this one? Is there really a God, or is it universal power? Is it just energy? Or is it just lights out after this world? Does my life have meaning? What is my life's purpose? Or is it better just go live your life and not even bother with the questions?
Howard Thurman had this great saying that he inscribed on a book of his when I was 15, and it said, seeking and finding, though they seem different, are one and the same. And I've always remembered that. It's almost like a koan, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that any of us can know the answers to some of the questions that you have raised, but we can have experiences that point us in the direction of an answer to the question. So I'm comfortable, given the experiences that I've had, with the possibility and the likelihood that there is indeed life before and after this life. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable with the idea that there is a God, but would my God be, you know, a person in a robe sitting on a mountain? Well, God might appear to me that way as a symbol, but I would think of God as the universal life force, mm-hmm. really, of the universe and common consciousness. And it rests in me and everybody else. And it's a creative force. And it's quite amazing when we look up from our iPhones and look at all the leaves on the trees and the clouds in the sky, et cetera. So I think our journeys point us in a direction, and the answers that we may have one day will shift. That's a journey, right? Mm-hmm. Think one time, and when I say, oh, gee, that's too constrictive. We need to open that up a little bit more. And so I would say that I think as we go along the journey, we may be afraid. You may be afraid of what answer might come to us and might be afraid of asking the question. And I can think of, I know in my experience, there are a lot of steps in my journey that I knew I needed to take, but I was afraid. And, you know, what if? But in terms of the larger questions, I am most comfortable with that which binds us together, which shows that we are sharing something in common, common ground, common consciousness. That's really what the heart of it is. I had an experience when I was at the foundation, and I was supposed to give a talk, really a keynote speech for a local television station. for their kickoff for their public service campaign. And they wanted me, of all people, to identify three urban issues and to provide solutions. You know, that was a tall order. And so when I was preparing this, I sat in my office after hours and just kind of opened myself to whatever might come to me. And I actually had a vision. And what I heard, I actually, saw, it was almost like a movie running backward in time. And I became aware that the problems that bedevil us today have been with us forever. And so the words that came to me were, conditions won't change until people learn how to share freely with each other and support each other without fear of losing something themselves. That all our problems are caused by fear. They can't be solved by ideology or money. People have to open their hearts. And that's the call, I think. The call is to open our hearts to one another. And it was actually that that awareness that made me realize I would probably be doing something different at some point that would help people to open their hearts. And so here we are today, many years later.
Well, first of all, I think it's fantastic, too. As you mentioned, your husband is sort of your sidekick now and sharing some of his own experiences. One of the things that I found interesting for myself is that when my wife, when I met her, my second wife here, she was very much involved with a particular practice of movement. It was Tai Chi, but it wasn't quite Tai Chi. And it was actually being conducted by a gentleman who is one of the co-authors of a book called The Jewel in the Lotus. His name is Sunyata Saraswati. And I got to meet him and work with him. Well, we were out in the yard one afternoon in the bright sunshine, blue skies of Arizona. I think it might have been early spring, I hope, so it wasn't too warm. But I had never done any of these practices. I didn't know any of the movements. And I tried following other people. And, of course, he kind of saw my frustrations. And he came over to me and he said to me very quietly, he says, don't worry about the positions. Don't worry about the pattern or following. Just let the music, because there was music playing, just let it carry you. Just flow with it. Let it take you wherever. We do as our minds tend to want to do that. We want a pattern. We want a protocol. We want a structure. But like in your case, with your experiences that you've had that have brought you, as you say, here today, there was no pattern or structure. It's just been flowing, hasn't it?
That's correct. It's just been about willing to follow wherever it's leading. And I never would have imagined ever, that many of the things that I did, whether it was healing or writing a book, none of it was planned. And it's just about saying yes when you get those signs and you know in your heart that's what you need to do.
Have you ever had a prompting that maybe troubled you? Now, I mean, you said very clearly that there has never been, and as far as you know, there isn't going to be any time where you're going to be saying, waving goodbye on the stern of a ship, but waving goodbye to your husband. I mean, you feel very strongly that there's that connection and you're going to be with him right to the very end. But have there been other challenging requests, shall we say, from the divine that you have struggled with? Or did you just say, okay, yeah, I'm just going to go?
Sure. I just said okay. yes, I've struggled with almost all of them because you wonder what people are going to think, right? Mm-hmm. Your mind gets into that game. I ended up going on many trips far away, never mind, to Santa Fe for weeks at a time for healing sessions. And I did have to leave my husband to do all that. And I always worried, you know, about how that would affect him. What I'd like to say to people who are listening is there sometimes is a fear that you can't have your spiritual path in your marriage too, or your relationship, whatever it is. And I'm just here to say that you can, but it takes work, and you have to be willing to, you know, to listen to each other. I'm trying to think. I know certainly it seemed like every time I was asked to do something, there would be this response within me that was like, oh my God, how am I going to do that? Oh, I'm going to see the guru. Or the guru appeared to somebody else and had a message to, you know, for me. And I'm like, really? Well, what is she going to want from me? Is she going to take me away from my husband? You know, that's not what I ever intended to do. But those fears, of sure, they come up every single time. And, you know, when I decided to leave the foundation, it had been kind of working on me for a couple of years that something was going to happen. And so I felt prepared. And I think by the time I made that commitment in the sarcophagus, that I was prepared. However, when I got home, interestingly enough, there was a sermon waiting for me in the mail. We used to get the written versions of the sermons from church, and I opened it up, and its title was Dare You Be Transformed. And I'm like, really? Do I really dare to go forth and do it, whatever it is? I don't know what I'm signing up for. And of course I was nervous about this. And then we talked earlier about signs. This is a beautiful example of signs. I read about, this was Transfiguration Sunday. And so the scriptural passages that the sermon refers to are Moses on Mount Sinai and the Transfiguration of Jesus. And I just was shaking because I had just been at the Basilica of the Holy Transfiguration at the base of Mount Sinai. And I had climbed to the top of Mount Sinai at sunrise. And my thoughts, of course, the whole time were about Moses and his going up there to receive the law. So the sermon ends with, you know, dare you, first he says, what about your careers? What about your life? And then it says, dare you be transformed? And I thought that was pretty much a big hit over the old head. What do you think? And so, I mean, I had to deal with my emotion around that, of course. But in my heart, I knew, of course, I really had no choice at this point, did I? So by the time I, you know, 3 weeks later, I had to wait because of the cycle at work and, you know, to make it an opportune time for people. And my husband said to me, you're not really going to resign tomorrow, are you? And I said, oh, yes, I am. And he said, you know, you're really blessed. You know you've been called. Most of us can never hear it. And it was like, oh, I was so touched by that. I've never forgotten it. So, I get hit over the head. And if I drag my feet, you know, it shows up in my body. And, you know, the body is a vehicle for giving us lots of messages. And sometimes it's just, you know, new energy coming in. And, you know, it makes us uncomfortable for a while. But sometimes it's showing us our resistance. And we have to decide whether we're going to move through that physical obstacle or not. So it's figuring out all those things is often challenging, but worth working at, I think.
Well, and I know, too, that it tests one's resolve, or maybe the better phrase or word is it tests one's commitment. You know, you started out on this journey, and you know, now the universe is placing this in front of you, saying, "Are you serious?" I've heard it kind of put that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we all have to deal with. We all are challenged by that. We'll survive. It's one of the things that I've often said in regards to a lot of these things. And that is this still small voice that's inside of us. It is, it's never going to put us in harm's way, but it may from time to time challenge us. It's not going to take us in a place where we're going to get hurt, but it definitely will challenge us. And it sounds to me like, yeah, you've been challenged quite a bit. I'm curious about another thing too, as far as your walk and as far as your connection with spirit and so forth. And that is, in the New Testament, it talks, Jesus is, I can't remember if this is the Sermon on the, it's been so long since I've actually read this passage, but he's talking to his disciples in particular, and he's doing these things, whether it's turning water into wine or what have you, and they're just like in awe, like, wow, this is, hey, Master, can we do that? Can we learn how to do that? Mm-hmm. And his response, and I paraphrase, yeah, you guys are going to do this stuff, but you guys are going to do even greater works.
Yes.
How? Talk to us a little bit about that from your perspective in this day and age, the 21st century. What can we look at it from the standpoint of what he was talking about for us today? What are those greater works in your perspective?
Well, that's a lovely question. That is a passage I've thought of often. Because we tend to, in our deification of Jesus, we tend to think that he is the only one who could do the healings. He's the only one who could, who could speak those words, who could have those crowds, really the healings are the things that, miracles that people talk about the most. And in my experience, that we do have miracles around us all the time, and we don't necessarily recognize them. And in our time, what we need to do is to bring what Jesus brought to the world. Not that it wasn't there before, but he brought this tremendous understanding of the power of love. And that's really our mission. And if we can be in that place of love, we too can do those miracles. I know you've had a lot of people talk about spiritual healing, and spiritual healing is really about just being present to somebody, being so totally present to a person with love, and helping them to, in Howard Thurman's words, he uses the words, get rid of whatever it is that stands between us and our total exposure to God's love. So whatever we can do, that's a miracle. That's a miracle. And it doesn't have to be on a societal level. It has to start with us, really. And we can do miracles every day with other people. When I started doing healings, I had no plan to do that. I went to see healers and, I went and had acupressure and all those things. And a friend of mine got sick on a ski weekend. He had the flu. And he was, had a fever. And I said, would you like a little acupressure? And so he sat in front of the fire, and I did this thing, just very routinely, just tuning into him, just being totally present to him. And, the next day he was back skiing on the slopes. And he's always joked, he'd like to go on the Today Show with me. But that's nothing. I'm not trying to compare that with the miracles that Jesus did, but I'm saying that we have the capacity with love to do what he did and to do even greater than he did if we allow ourselves. And we haven't allowed ourselves. And we haven't allowed ourselves to move beyond the chatters of the mind, you know, while respecting the chatters of the mind, to move into that place of love that really, if we could get there, would just resolve all the problems that we have. And that's what would be greater, because Jesus lived in a very divided world, as we know. I mean, after all, he was killed. Mm-hmm. So, but we have that opportunity, and I believe we have it now because we have a lot of division, we have a lot of violence, and we have a lot of hate. And I believe that this is all being brought to the surface so that it can be healed. I mean, this is a great opportunity for us. We can choose. You know, we can choose. Are we going to go the road of love or not? And how do we do that? We start with ourselves, and we find peace within ourselves, and we learn how to, you know, be totally loving to the people around us, and to be accepting, and to bring everybody into the circle. I like to think that we have this circle, and there are certain things that are always outside the circle. Those are the things that need to be healed. But how do we draw those things into the circle? So I'm glad you brought that up, because it's something I've thought of a lot and wondered how it is going to happen. But do I think it's possible? I do think it's possible.
Yeah, and I do too. And sometimes it's those simple things that are kind of miraculous. One of the things that comes to mind every time I go down this path is a book that I read back in 1982 by a good friend and a guest I had on a program back in Phoenix. It was a book called The Greatest Miracle in the World by Og Mandino. And I actually had the great pleasure of interviewing him a few years before his passing back in the 80s. And I remember how it was described in the book that the greatest miracle in the world had to do with a character whose characteristic was as what was referred to as a rag picker, and picking up the refuse of that are around him. But in this case, he was a rag picker who picked up the human, if you will, refuse, the human throwaway people that, you know, we don't want to see or hear from, and so forth. And so this book focused on that whole principle of doing that. And it was just a fascinating story. And that comes up every time I think about that. That, there's the miracle, is transforming ourselves.
I agree. Beautiful.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. I am just thrilled to have you here on the program, and I'm looking forward to maybe having you back again. But one of the things that I wanted to touch on before we wrapped up was what you have coming up down the road. I mean, certainly you're still on the book tour, you're traveling, you're doing all of these different things, but are there other works in the works, as it were?
I haven't gotten a call for that yet. I wouldn't be surprised, because I love to write, and I've had a wonderful response to this book. It seems to have touched a lot of people very deeply, so I won't be surprised, but it would not be a book like this one. It wouldn't be an autobiographical, you know, long story like this. Mm-hmm. I do know that, but I don't know, but I'm certainly open to that. And you're right, I am totally focused on all the events and the interviews and traveling at the moment, but which I'm enjoying a great deal. But it would be lovely if I had the opportunity to do another book in my lifetime. But we'll see how spirit calls.
Absolutely, yeah. I've been working on mine for 18 years.
I understand.
And one day it'll manifest the way it's supposed to. I'm not going to press. Maybe that's part of the problem. I haven't been pressing, and I should be pressing more. But be that as it may.
Busy life.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
It is.
People don't realize how much time it takes.
Yeah.
It's enormous.
It's enormous.
And then the time it takes to get it from once you finish it to you think you finished it, right? The manuscript, getting that to publication, then that's a long process as well.
Yeah.
But I wish you well on that.
Joan Diver, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing your story and the work that you're doing these days. And people can go to your website, which is joandiver.com, JOANDIVER.com. Find out all about you, the book, the work that you're doing, and we encourage people to go there. We'll be linked to you as well. And if you should ever find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to talk more about this.
Thank you. That'd be lovely.
Before we let you go, I have three final questions that I like to ask all of my guests. Mm-hmm. I want to remind our listeners again that if you're just joining us here, if you're listening to the radio broadcast, there's more. There's plenty more for you to listen to. So go to the podcast locations that I've mentioned, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, LinkedIn, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, go to the richarddugan.com homepage or the radio shows page as well. First question, Joan, is who is Joan Diver?
Oh, my goodness. Who is she? Hmm. She's this being walking the planet and following where she's called for all... She's no more special than anybody else. She's just been given a very exciting and exotic life in some ways. And I believe that's so that she could share it with other people so that they might be inspired to follow where they're called and to help heal our world. So, but I'm also a mother. I'm a grandmother. I have a wonderful family. I live in Boston, and I am thrilled to be meeting so many new people at this stage of my life. So thank you for giving me that opportunity.
You're very welcome. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Well, I think I've touched on that I certainly hope that through the book, which is really my focus now, it's really my main instrument of healing at the moment. I am really hoping to inspire people to find their own path to healing and wholeness so that we can create a more loving world. And in that process, I'm hoping that they'll be inspired by my story, that to look at whatever their pains are, their wounds, their fears, and help to heal them and be inspired to find peace and love and forgiveness and to be open to the possibility that we are indeed all one, that there is common ground, that there is a common consciousness. And that's really the mission to which I devote my life and my work.
And what is your life's purpose?
Well, I think I've just really described it. The messages and the leadings and everything that I have gotten over the years, I often say that the theme of my life is common ground. And I say that because I sat in the congregation of Howard Thurman, an African-American grandson of a slave who was able to embrace everybody, no matter where they came from, no matter how they had threatened them. And he always said, keep open the door of thy heart, no matter how many doors are shut against thee. So that's how I was brought up. And he wrote a book called Common Ground, The Search for Common Ground. And then my husband and I were featured in a Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Common Ground, that was about the lives of three families in Boston, an Irish family, an African-American family, and the Divers. And we were considered Yankees. I WASP is... maybe okay. But it's not that I'm from a really wealthy family. I'm not. But we were obviously the family that had the most worldly treasure, shall we say. And that book was written with so little judgment. And it was written about busing and desegregation in Boston during the 1960s, right from the time of Martin Luther King, and sort of spanned that decade. And it became really an urban chronicle. It's a very long book, but it's written like a novel. And you see that all these three families had their own pains. Many of the ancestral stories were so similar. We lived on a block where we were fighting crime, where some of the members of one of the families lived. The daughters of the black family were going to school in an Irish part of town. So all of our lives were intermingled in some way. So that book is still being taught today in college and high school classrooms. So that's something that came out in 1985. Meanwhile, in 1985 is when I went to Santa Fe for my first healing session. It brought me in touch with the divine inside myself. And I had an experience that was very profound and actually very difficult in many ways, except that I experienced so much love and forgiveness. And so that theme has continued with spiritual teachers, whether it's Guru in India who says, you know, see God in each other, or, you know, it's Howard Thurman's words, we all belong to each other, or if it's in the Christian tradition, you know, see Christ in each other, or the other things that I've studied. So that's really the theme of my life, and that's really what I devote myself to.
Well, Joan Diver, thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. I greatly appreciate it, and I do encourage people to go to your website, joandiver.com. We will be linked to your website, and just as a side note for folks going to the SoundCloud links, when you click on the interview for Joan and you see that little grocery cart up in the upper right-hand corner of the line where you're playing the file, that's the link to, it's not real clear, but I'm just telling you, that's the link to the website, joandiver.com. And again, Joan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great fun.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.